What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer, young Belichick in the flesh, Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, it's so wonderful to be here today with you. How was your weekend?
It was great, Mike. Really enjoyed seeing Trump's pen pal, Bill Belichick, take that loss last night. Hired his son so the whole family could take an L on a Sunday night with the whole country watching the most popular TV show every week, the whole Belichick family losing. Bill coaching scared at home. You just love to see it. You really just love to see it. So I'm really riding high off the emotions of that game. Really enjoyed seeing the Democratic People's Republic of Boston's, you know, propaganda machine rally around Belichick last night, trying to defend that call, as you were on Twitter, as our editor Jason Schwartz was on Twitter. So I'm chilling, Mike. I'm having a great time.
It was a tough loss for the Pats, I got to say. They played, I thought, exceptionally well. We're not going to get too in the weeds here.
Nice moral victory for the Pats. I agree.
Hey, six Super Bowls, you know, I'll take moral victories. I don't care,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, sure,
it's okay.
Sure. Listen,
I will say that game last night was in higher relevance than probably – you're a Dolphins fan, is that correct, Rohan?
That is true, yeah.
So I think that game last night, what is this, week four of the regular season? Mm-hmm. I think that game was more relevant than any – the Miami Dolphins have played since what? You were in the fifth grade?
And guess what? With all that relevance, who's at the bottom of the AFC East looking up at everyone else with the rest of us? The Patriots and the Dolphins, baby. You know who's won more games in Boston this year than the Patriots? The Miami Dolphins. How about that, Mike?
Again, it's week four, but I expect this behavior.
How about that, Mike?
That's what losing culture will get you. Yep, that's exactly right.
Did that doink also remind you of Bam Adebayo's block on Jason Tatum, or was it just me?
That was a low blow and completely uncalled for.
But I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get personal.
It's okay. It's okay. We support Belichick's decision to kick that field goal.
We don't. Who is we? It was
Patriots Nation. It was inches.
Yeah, of course. Propaganda machine.
Inches off.
Oh God. You know deep down that was an awful decision.
It was not.
That was cowardly. Let me put it this way. As someone who's been losing to Tom Brady my entire life, okay? When you have a chance to kick a 56-yard field goal in the pouring rain with an injured kicker and give Tom Brady the ball back with 50 seconds left and two timeouts to go ahead, yeah, no. That's exactly the kind of decision teams playing the Patriots have made over and over and over again to great failure for the last 20 years. And to see Belichick do it was just the irony. It was beautiful. Listen, Belichick, it could have a similar career to Jim Caldwell, who is a really good coach without Brady. So I'm looking forward to seeing him hopefully getting that career record.
Looking forward
to seeing him getting that record without Brady up to 500. I think he's 13 games under now. He'll have a chance. Maybe if he keeps coaching he can get to 500 without Brady.
I am definitely the one spewing propaganda right now. That's a fact.
That's a statistic that he's under 500 career record without Tom Brady.
I promise our listeners we're going to talk NBA today, but I just want to say that a couple more facts. Nick Folk, the field goal kicker for the Patriots, had made 36 straight field goals up until that point. The Patriots had converted how many third downs in that game?
I believe their quarterback had completed 19 passes in a row.
That is not
point.
No. See, this,
and
this
the Buccaneers
is what we do.
Were the Buccaneers what, were down three starting quarterbacks. They signed a guy off the street and were playing him in that game. And then two more got hurt during the game.
We can't answer questions here when we know we have a losing argument and we're arguing in bad faith. How many third downs did the Patriots convert in last night's game, Rohan?
I don't know. I don't have the stat sheet in front of me, Mike.
Two. So when it's fourth, let me just explain football to you real quick. When it's fourth and three, mm-hmm. and it's pouring rain, mm-hmm. and you have a rookie quarterback, mm-hmm. and the defense that just mm-hmm. won the Super Bowl knows that you're going to throw, it's not a great chance of you
except
converting.
It wasn't the defense who just won the Super Bowl, because like I mentioned, they were missing most of their secondary. Then two more guys got hurt during the game, so they're down to all their backup cornerbacks. The Patriots passing game was working beautifully, as I mentioned. At one point, they completed 19 straight passes. The kicker was hurt. It was pouring rain. A 56-yard field goal is already a low percentage field goal. If you do make the field goal, you're leaving way too much time for Brady, who only needs a field goal. The other day, we just saw Aaron Rodgers go the length of the field in 34 seconds.
Irrelevant.
It's okay. Listen,
completely
Mike,
irrelevant.
Welcome back to the rest of the league. Belichick's coaching scared now. This reminds me a lot of his Cleveland tenure.
Yes, you were definitely alive during his Cleveland tenure.
Just coaching scared, baby. We love it.
This is why I had to stop watching football, because of the discourse here that is just absolutely, it's blind rage. Everybody's against the Patriots.
It really is, dude. Mondays after football Sunday are just the worst day of the week. It's rough,
okay,
man. It's
we gotta pivot before I like slam my headset down on the ground and shatter it into a million pieces. So on today's show, Rohan, we are going to open up the mailbag again, and we're gonna talk a little Blazers. We're gonna talk a little bit about some rebuilds going on in the NBA. We're gonna talk a little bit Trae Young versus Bradley Beal. Which is a fun conversation, I suppose. We will make it one. And a bunch of other stuff. But first, a quick reminder to all of our listeners to keep sending your emails in to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. I will say, the emails that we've received over the past few days, Rohan, I mean, the Squid Game, Love Island, Will Smith rom-com, like NBA diehard fan Venn diagram that I didn't know existed is just alive and well and thriving in this space. So thank you to you all for participating. We love you.
Just to give everyone a quick update on my Squid Game progress, I have 2 episodes left.
Oh,
probably going to knock those out tonight.
Yes.
And I'm very excited to see the thrilling conclusion here. Shout out to all my Love Island watchers, and shout out to who emailed us to say that Definitely Maybe is one of the best rom-coms of all time. I agree. It's up there for me.
I do not have that emailer's name. I believe it's Chris who emailed us that. I'm not 100%, so I apologize if I got that wrong. We can go back at some point and correct the record if so. But shout out to, I do also agree that that was a fun email to receive over the weekend. So we're going to start with this email from longtime Open Floor Globe Hall of Fame member Thaddeus.
Platinum certified multiple times.
Absolutely.
Over. Goated.
Absolute living
Thaddeus
legend.
Is goated, as D'Angelo Russell would say.
Yes, in a different context.
Yeah.
So Thaddeus writes in, "What's up, Chris, Michael, and Rohan? I enjoyed the top 100 episodes, and I could see how the exercise wrecks your brain. I think many people casually throw out things like he's a top 30 guy, not realizing what that means." Preach, Thaddeus, preach. The top 100 seems like a low bar, but those guys are really good. Which brings me to the Blazers. Are we undervaluing where they are after the addition of number 98 on your list, Larry Nance Jr.? The top of the conference is full of unknowns. Clay won't be back till Christmas. There's no Jamal Murray, there's no Kawhi Leonard, and Dallas lost a coach that squeezes wins out of spare parts. The door feels very open to steal a home court spot. Thaddeus then, in typical Thaddeus fashion, goes on to write a Dostoevsky novel via email explaining why the Blazers are awesome, which we really appreciate, but we just don't have time to read. So my question off of this wonderful email that Thaddeus blessed us with, Rohan, is like, are we underrating or undervaluing or like sleeping on the Portland Trailblazers? Like, there's a lot of, the narrative is just very negative, I feel, because of the, you know, the trade rumors. There was the offseason kind of debacle with their head coach search. But you look at this roster, you look at you dig into some of the data, the lineup data from last season, particularly after they got Norm Powell. And it's like, this team was good, and they have Dame, and if Dame's committed, if CJ's healthy, if everybody's healthy, they could be really good.
Yeah, so Thaddeus mentions the unknowns at the top of the conference, right? I think the issue with the Blazers is that they're unknown. We know that they can be pretty good every year. I think the issue is we know what their ceiling is. which is that they are just one of those teams that they need things to break right for them to have a deep playoff run. Like, you know, the year they went to the Western Conference Final was like they just kind of had the bracket fall in their favor. And I still think that's their highermost ceiling, is to make it to the final round in the West. I don't think they're going to make it to the finals with their current core. And that's what it is. It's not that I think the Blazers are going to be a bad team, and I know that we both even had Lillard and McCollum off our top 10 duos list, if you remember that, back to the summer. But yeah, Mike, I just think the problem is more that they're unknown. They're like a finalized commodity at this point. I think Nance is a nice addition, but he doesn't dramatically raise the ceiling of their team. And we know that they're going to be good. They're a high floor, low ceiling team that can win a lot of games. But I mean, you look at some of their playoff exits now. They lost to that Lakers team in the bubble. Now, granted, Dame was hurt by the end of that series, but that wasn't, I don't think either of us think that was the strongest iteration of the LeBron Anthony Davis Lakers. Mm-hmm. They lost last year to the Nuggets, who were starting Campazzo and Rivers in the backcourt. I mean, that's a pretty inexcusable playoff loss for Dame. I mean, you go through his playoff track record, like, they've usually lost to really good teams almost every year. That one was pretty dispiriting. So I don't think we're sleeping on the Lakers, or Blazers rather. We're obviously not talking about them a ton, but I think it's because we just kind of know who they are at this point.
So that's a fair, I think that's a fair way to look at it. I mean, the core is similar, right? Like CJ, you feel like you've seen this story before. You got CJ, you have Dame, Yusuf Nurkic, who gets hurt at the worst times, it's seemingly every single season, unfortunately. But the lineup data that I referenced earlier is just like so positive from last season. Like after they got Norm Powell, the starting five of Dame, CJ, Roko, Nurkic, and Norm Powell, like offensive rating 118.3,
their offense,
which is
was
insane
nuts, for sure. Yes,
and defensive rating 104.8, which is super impressive. 13.5 net rating. So, you know, the sample size there is 370 minutes. We're gonna see if Norm Powell's, you know, last season was a contract year, and he shot the lights out. He played terrific basketball in Portland after the trade as well, but he just got that contract. We'll see how well he plays. He's a little undersized for the role that they have him there. But I love the moves that they made behind, like the bench moves. I do think that those are, you know, obviously they need to improve the defense. You get Larry Nance Jr., who is a terrific defensive player. I don't think people realize how good he is in terms of his versatility, in terms of his intelligence, just like one of the smartest bigs at jumping passing lanes and wreaking havoc. So I love that pickup for them, and he can play some small ball five. But like even just replacing Enes Kanter with Cody Zeller, like that's just a really big upgrade. It seems very marginal just because of what we're talking about here from a financial sense, from a minute sense and playing time, etc. But like Enes Kanter is one of the worst defenders at his position in recent NBA history. Cody Zeller is not like Dikembe Mutombo, but he's
solid. He's steady.
Solid. Solid's a really good word for it. So I like that there. I like you just like losing Carmelo Anthony. Not to be like disrespectful, but sometimes there's an addition by subtraction there where you put in someone like even Tony Snell or Ben McLemore or Nasir Little. Just like I don't know who else is going to be in the rotation there, but I think that that's a positive. So I think this defense can be, and obviously there's the coaching change with from Terry Stotts to Chauncey Billups, and we'll see how Chauncey kind of puts his imprint on the team.
We're getting a note from
our podcast, who told us in our last episode that he is a humongous Blazers fan. He writes in when I just disparaged Enes Kanter that Enes Kanter has set the franchise record for rebounds in a game with
thank
30.
You, Shelby.
Thank you for that tidbit, Shelby.
One
we
time,
appreciate you.
Mike, one time when I was doing power rankings for Sports Illustrated, there was a time when the Rockets and Blazers were both on huge win streaks. Mm-hmm. I think the Blazers had won 12 in a row. The Rockets were on 13 in a row, something crazy. And mm-hmm. I put the Blazers at number one, and I was like, yeah, I just feel like mixing it up, putting Portland number one this week. And like, people in Houston were freaking out. Like, I'm not joking. Mentions are blowing up, and they asked me to do a radio show down in Houston, and I'm like, okay. And I'm doing the radio show, and the guy's like, do you know how many rebounds a game Clint Capela's averaging? I was like, what does that have to do with anything? Okay. So you're listening out all these nice things about the Blazers in classic Pina fashion. You make me actually have an opinion, but tell me what your ceiling is for Portland then.
Well, so like,
can they make the finals?
I don't think you can say that about, I don't think that's like a good way to like grade a team. I think
I agree, but Thaddeus is asking us if we're sleeping on them, and he's making it seem like they can take advantage of the uncertainty in the conference. And I'm saying that's why that's not possible.
So what Thaddeus posits specifically is, can the Blazers get home court? That's the question. Okay. So can they be a top four? And I think that's meaningful. Like if you get to the playoffs and you're a four seed, obviously having home court it matters with fans back in arenas, et cetera. Yeah. So is that possible? I think it's possible for sure.
I definitely think it's possible because, like I mentioned, they're a high baseline team with a core that's been together for years that is successful. If that's the question, then yes. My thing with the Blazers, I agree, Mike. In most cases, I don't think it's insignificant to get home court, and I'm not trying to denigrate the Blazers' success. My only thing is when you've had a team that's been together for this long and you have a star of Dame's caliber – that's when it starts to matter to me a little bit less. Mm-hmm. Where it would be great if they got home court, but for them, the expectations with a guy like Dame, I think they're just a little bit different. So, you know, if Thaddeus is asking if I'm sleeping on them, that's why. It's just because, you know, I still think they need an injection if they're going to do anything different relative to what they've done, you know, most of Dame's career. But do I think they could get home court? I definitely think that's a possibility, especially with the injuries to the Nuggets and Clippers, which it's hard to talk about, you know, because I'm about to say it's not really something we've talked about too much, because what can you really say other than it's a bummer? But the West would have been so wide open and so incredible this year had Kawhi and Jamal Murray been healthy, because I think it's just really chaos at the top of the West right now. And I would really have loved to see a healthy team from all these seasons, because I have no idea who's going to win.
I don't want to divert this podcast because we have such great emails to get to, but commenting on what you just said, if Kawhi was healthy, I don't think it would be wide open. I really don't. I think the Clippers would be the runaway favorites in the West.
It's possible, yeah. I mean, but hey, we also thought that their first year and then.
Sure, but they had to go through the fire, man. They went through the fire.
Yeah.
And now this was supposed to be the year, unfortunately. Yeah. Or last year could have been the year.
Would you trade Kawhi for Reggie Jackson straight up right now? I mean, it's a conversation. So.
Okay, yeah, and we are off the rails. Okay, so now we have this email from Liam, and I just want to say, Liam, you are Babe Ruth, you are Hank Aaron, you're just smashing them out of the park with these emails, and you have two on today's episode, so shout out to you forever. So Liam writes, and this is actually, Rowan, you texted me, I think, when I sent the outline over to you. You were so impressed with this question. And
it's a fun one.
It's very fun. So Liam writes, one thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately is what some teams would look like if every player on their roster was in their prime, and what teams would become much better.
I just want to shout out Liam already, because what an awesome thing to be thinking about. That's just cool. I love that. I love that you're thinking about that. That's dope.
Liam continues. There is, of course, the obvious choice in the Lakers. Maybe you could go with the Nets, too. So my question for you is, outside of the Lakers and Nets, what teams do you think would improve the most if everyone on their roster was in their prime? And he shouts out the Miami Heat, as a team that would make a humongous leap forward, given that they have PJ Tucker, they have Kyle Lowry, they have Victor Oladipo, they have Jimmy Butler.
They also, I don't want to spoil something I'm going to say, but I just want to say to Liam, I love that he's respecting the culture. You know, I
bet Haslam.
Liam's in the best
Haslam
shape.
In his prime, too. Disrespect.
Yeah, Liam's probably in the best shape of his life right now. He probably just ran a conditioning test before sending that email. So shout out to Liam, baby.
I will say that if there's one thing, and I went through every team, the way I judged this was, and I hope you did the same, like old players, like primes that we've seen that we can kind of reference. So like, it's not like you wouldn't look at the Mavs and be like, oh, if Luka was in his prime.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree entirely. Oh, that's part of the Louise. Fun of this. That's part of this exercise.
This will be fun then.
Just looking ahead. Like, yeah, he mentioned the Heat. What if Tyler Hero was in his prime? You know what I mean?
You'd have, I'm trying to make a joke. my brain is
maybe
is
he would drop right 45 now on the Celtics in the playoffs instead, you know?
Anyway, if there's one thing that I kind of gleaned after doing this exercise, it's that the NBA is really young, and I was going through teams trying to find like old players who've had really respectable careers, and they're all the Lakers or the Nets. It's like, yeah, it made this a lot of fun. There was one obvious team that I'm going to talk about in a second. I'm going to throw out the first team.
We did get a mean joke from Shelby in regards to Tyler Hero and his prime that I will not be reading personally.
Shelby writes, Tyler Hero will be out of the league before his prime.
Wow. Hot that's takes why you're coming in from the, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Shelby's an absolute legend already on today's show. So the first team that I want to shout out here as being, so much better if everyone was in their prime, it's got to be the Golden State Warriors.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh my God.
Like they're number one
prime. Yeah. Draymond.
Number one with a bullet. Like, yeah. Steph is a two-time MVP, and he completely revolutionized the sport. You have Draymond Green, same deal, basically, on the other end. You have Klay Thompson, second greatest shooter who ever lived. As you said, Iguodala in his prime, we never even saw that during the title run, during the dynasty. He was a little bit past it, for sure, definitely offensively. And you know, they have Otto Porter, they have Nemanja Bjelica, they have some other guys who are
Bjelica.
I gotta shout them out every single time.
The steal.
Yes, exactly. And we got some. I just want to say it real quick. Like, we got some people mentioned the Bjelica, me calling him a steal in reference to our Lakers slander from the last episode. And I just want to say Nemanja Bjelica is better than Carmelo Anthony. I just got to state that as a fact here. But anyway, the Warriors. Did you have the Warriors as a team that you were kind of
the Warriors are really – so as you mentioned, the issue with this exercise, and not that Liam's question is not great, is like you mentioned, the old players in this league are too concentrated on the contenders. So once you take out the Lakers and Nets, this just becomes more difficult, right? I mean, the Warriors are obviously the pick. I mean, even prime Otto Porter, someone who you neglect to mention, someone who I do think is going to be closing some games from the. Oh, did you? Okay. I just, the hate, my mind just went black. Yeah. They're really the ones. I mean, they would be incredible. I mean, if you get 2016 Steph, 2016 Klay, 2015 probably Draymond, 2016 Draymond, they're absolutely nuts. They're absolutely nuts. But then the Heat are a good one because you really just have to look at the old rosters on the around the league, right? I think the Heat have the second oldest roster in the NBA. You get Lowry a little bit younger, a little bit healthier. You mentioned PJ Tucker. We don't really know what prime Bam is, so maybe we get even a better version of Bam. Prime Victor Oladipo, that would
that's
be
an all NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, prime Lowry and prime Oladipo backcourt is spectacular. So, yeah, I think those are the Warriors and the Heat are really the two that jumped out to me, just because you have to look at the older rosters. Now, you criticizing me for saying looking at the younger rosters, but listen. The team that came to mind, a prime version of the Atlanta Hawks, because you give all those guys, another 2-3 years in the league, then you also get, you know, the best version of Capella. Yeah, that was the one that really stood out to me, was the Hawks, because I think that obviously we're going to talk about Trae Young when we get to this Bradley Beal question, but that's a team that I think, ignore kind of their playoff success, I think that's a team that could be better over the next 2 or 3 years, even if they don't necessarily make it that far again in the playoffs.
There will be, no spoiler, a lot of time spent talking about the Atlanta Hawks in due time on this podcast. I do think that if you add Prime, I had them on here even with the way I was looking at it, because it's like you add Prime Gallo and Prime Lou Will to what they already have, and it's just like, that's scary right there.
Yeah.
Like Prime Gallo is basically a borderline all-star, and he was really good for them last year as well. So that would be... That's a team right there. I think one of the more fun teams to think about, if we kind of blend how we both are viewing this, is the Phoenix Suns. You get prime Chris Paul, prime DeAndre Ayton, prime Devin Booker, prime Bridges, et cetera.
Prime Bossman 99, Jay Crowder.
Which I don't even know. What is Jay Crowder's prime? I was thinking about that.
Jay Crowder's prime is like those 12 games a season when he hits every single one of his threes.
It was the second round in the bubble against the Bucks.
Yes,
I think that was his prime. That was his apex, at least.
But like, I think only the first three games.
Yes, fair.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about the Suns for here? And even if you just took, like Chris Paul and made it his prime,
no,
the Suns are incredible.
The Suns is another one that. Listen, you know how I feel about Chris Paul. Just one of the best to ever do it. One of my all-time favorite NBA players. And yeah, man, you put him in his prime and now he's got the, you combine his current vegan diet with him in his prime body and you got a force. You got an absolute force. So the Suns is absolutely a really good pick.
I'm just going to throw out a few other teams here that I thought were interesting. The Knicks. You get prime D Rose, prime Kendall Walker.
I was going to put the Knicks on there, but I didn't think want people to think I was joking. But I mean, yeah, we know what prime Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson can do together. And you're right, you mix in Kemba. No, the Knicks are absolutely a good pick.
So that was a fun one I was thinking about.
And then that means you lock in last season's Julius Randle too.
That was it right there. That was the peak, most likely. I can't wait for Julius Randle to just win MVP, Finals MVP, Most Improved again, and just
we have to quit our jobs.
I probably will quit my job if that were to happen. Not gonna lie.
Oh, just in leave and shame. We're telling people, you know, 6 years from now. I don't know. I'm working at a mechanic. I don't know. I'm just a secretary somewhere. I don't know. I'm just doing something completely different. Like I used to host a basketball podcast. I promise.
Since you got to talk about the Heat, I do want to mention the Celtics here. They have a nice blend of old and young. Al Horford in his prime. Obviously, Robert Williams in his prime is Will Chamberlain 2.0. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all those guys. So I have to.
I think Horford's going to be good for them this year, by the way. I'm high on Horford.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. Real quick, who do you think is going to. What do you think is going to be the starting lineup for the Celtics?
I think it's going to be Horford, Tatum, Brown. They started the double bigs last year, and it was weird. And I was wondering if they would go back to that.
I would bet that they do, personally.
So you think they'll start Robert Williams and Horford together?
I do. That's a lot. I know that just labeling them as double bigs, you can do that if you want. They're very different than Daniel Tice and Tristan Thompson.
Yes. But they're still both bigs. For as good of a shooter and, you know, initiator that Horford is, there's still like a certain limitation than starting like an actual forward as opposed to a, you know, tweener center or whatever you want to call him.
I love that this has diverted into a Celtics conversation, but I do want to say that you can have Al Horford guard fives with help, and then you can have, because everyone's going to be huge. You have Smart, Tatum, Jaylen, Horford, Rob Williams, and you can have Rob Williams guard the stretchy fours, and really it not be a problem, I don't think. So I love that lineup defensively.
I don't think it's going to be a bad lineup, and I think overall they're going to be really good. But you don't think Schroeder's going to start? I think Schroeder's going to start.
He's not going to start. No, I think that if they were to start him, I mean, if they were to go small with their starting five construction, or not even small, just like normal, I think
Schroeder and Smart, and then
no, I think it would be Jay Rich starting at the two, and Tatum would play the four. That's what I think.
Interesting.
So I don't think that's going to happen. So
I think they're going to be
because I think those guys are better suited off the bench. Schroeder, Jay Rich.
I see what you're saying.
Okay, this was fun. I'm glad that we got to talk a little bit of Celtics.
Yeah, I can see it. Obliging me. I can see it in your eyes. Yeah.
I'm in a better mood now. The last team, before we move on to this email from Zach about Trae Young and Bradley Beal, the last team I want to throw out there to you is the Cleveland Cavaliers. And primarily because Kevin Love would be in his prime. And I just love thinking about that because they're super young.
Do we know that Kevin Love's not still in his prime and he just doesn't play basketball anymore? So there's no way to really even know.
I'm pretty sure he is not in his prime based on, I'm pretty sure the sky is blue right now.
Yeah.
Or at least it's gray outside my window. Yeah, but you had prime Kevin Love, who when he was at his best was like the seventh best player in the world, like 2020s left and right.
Did you say seventh best?
Oh yeah, I would say that's like I'm thinking about like I don't even know what year
when Love had his when Love had that one big season. Who did you think was better, him or Blake Griffin?
Oh, this is great. I love questions like this. I was a pretty so I liked I think I liked I want to say I liked Love slightly because he could shoot threes.
I liked Griffin more because I thought he was more athletic, but. It's so hard to look back on that now. We all know that season I'm talking about. Just none of us can remember the year. There's because didn't Griffin finish like top five in MVP voting or something crazy?
I think it was 2015, but I can't remember
that
what
sounds
year.
Right.
Let me look this up instead of being a complete fail right now.
But now I'm like, what if Kevin Love had been playing with Chris Paul that whole time as opposed to Blake Griffin?
So it was 2014. It was his last year in Minnesota. Right before he went to Cleveland when he's averaging 26. Oh my God, these numbers. I have not looked up Kevin Love's prime numbers in a minute here. 26 points, 12 and a half rebounds, 4.4 assists, shooting 6.6 threes per game, 37.6%.
Which is a lot for that year, especially for someone at his position.
Yeah, wild stuff out of Kevin Love, who was incredible.
The problem is those teams were so bad that it really... I think I still would have taken Griffin at the time, or even now.
You couldn't have gone wrong with either. Yeah. It wasn't a Deron Williams CP kind of debate.
It was not.
They were both
it was
awesome.
Not.
Okay, so speaking of comparing players needlessly, we have this email from Zach who writes, "This is not a Trey doesn't get enough respect question. All-star and all-NBA voting aside, I think this offseason the Trey Young doubt has more or less gone away. But one thing that has been aggravating us as Atlanta fans is the top 100 lists listing Beal ahead of Trey. I think they are interesting players to compare, but what's the rationale? Is it just that Beal is a better shooter? Is it because Beal may be on the move so it's easier to imagine him flourishing elsewhere? It's not team success. Beal may be a bit better of a scorer, but they're basically playing different sports when it comes to passing ability. Can you run a playoff offense through Beal as your main guy? Does it matter?" So, Rohan, what are your thoughts about us having Beal ahead of Trae Young on our top 100? And do you feel like we are being completely disrespectful to Mr. Trae Young?
So, once again, I'm forced to look at the top 100 list that I would never have to look at again for the rest of my life. And Zach... Hey, buddy, I agree with you because I had Trae Young one spot ahead of Bradley Beal on my list. I had Trae, I think, at 19 and Beal at 20 on my list. And my separator was that playoff success, the fact that I'd seen Trae do it. It's very interesting because if you put them kind of just side by side as individuals, I think you'd want Beal because he's bigger. He would seems to be someone who would be more durable. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, better shooter. The measurables on Beal are really good. What's interesting to me is the fact that Trae can be that guy who runs all those pick and rolls over and over and over again and pass as well as he does. His like style of play is just kind of more conducive to playoff success, I think. But I mean... I think I was clearly in the minority because I got overruled on Beal over Trae. But, I mean, I don't want to sound like a broken record. We've brought the – but you know, those guys are very close on the list for a reason. They're both very good. The Hawks are just one of those teams. We talked about this in the sustainability episode. It's hard to know where their reality is based just off last year. And Trey still has his defensive issues. He just somehow went through a playoff run where none of the opponents really had an opportunity to kind of go after them. So I think they're very close. And I think Beal, frankly, has just been doing it for longer over a more sustained period of time. And that has to mean something.
So I don't want to throw our colleague Jeremy Wu under the bus here, but you, Rohan, you had Trae Young at 19 and Beal at 20, as you said. I had Trae Young at 14 and Beal at 15. Chris Herring had Trae Young at 18 and Beal at 19. Mm. And then Wu comes in just throwing hot lava, Trae Young at 21 and Bradley Beal at 14. And we did address this when Wu and I did our top 100 episodes, so I don't need to – I mean, he explained himself with his thoughts in that episode. You can go back and listen if you want to know more. So I will say – I'm just going to like kind of, again, reiterate everything that you said, Rohan. Like, these players are extremely similar. I can see the argument for why one would have Beal ahead of Trey. And for me, it's primarily because Beal is so good off the ball as well as on the ball. Like, his usage is higher than Trey's, which is absolutely remarkable. But he can also come off pin downs. He's willing to do that. Come off these DHOs where he starts in the corner and just kind of zooms into the paint. So he can be useful in an offense in different ways. On the weak side, the Trey hasn't really, he just hasn't gotten there yet. And, you know, we could see this season, I think we will see this season, him develop a little bit more and evolve off the ball a little bit more, but we just haven't seen it yet. So I like that part of Beal. You know, statistically, they're very similar. Trey obviously goes up a level when you just talk about the playmaking ability, as Zach pointed out. I think Beal is also just a better three-level scorer than Trae Young is. I mean, Trae Young is not finishing at the rim efficiently. He's got the floater down for sure, but he doesn't attack from the mid-range as Beal does. And, you know, I think that Beal is probably a better shooter. I do think it's marginal there. So, I mean, it's just, it's a coin flip with these guys.
You know, it's funny. I think with Young and Beal, like, if you switched Young and Beal, I think both teams might be slightly worse, just the tiniest bit. But I think if you put them both on good teams, Beal would help a good team more than Young.
Yeah, no, I absolutely believe that for everything that I just said. Like, I think that Beal could go on to the Nets and just fit right away and be great, assuming that he gets vaccinated and is able to play in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But so I had to slide that in. So the consensus here is that Trae Young is definitely better, and everyone who thinks that Brad Beal is better is an idiot. Is that what we're saying, Rohan?
No, it's not. It's absolutely not. Okay. It's very close, and hopefully we never have to litigate the tiny differences on this list ever again. How about Andrew Wiggins? I know we don't want to get into it, but finally getting vaccinated.
I wonder why.
Yeah. It's almost like having consequences for not getting the vaccine worked. And listen, like, part of me would have maybe respected Wiggins if he was so committed to this quote unquote cause that he was like, I'm going to forfeit half my money. But yeah, or maybe, you know, I guess that the religious exemption was not that strongly held of a belief.
It wasn't.
He put a price on that religious exemption.
He did. He did. Good for him for getting the shot. That's better for everybody.
Yeah.
So we don't want to shame people who get the shot, even though they were holding out there. But no, shout out to Andrew Wiggins for finally getting the vaccination. Okay. So as promised, we have another email from Liam. This one is also a total banger.
This was a good one. This was a good one. Yeah.
We did a little bit of a variation here from what Liam actually wrote in, but I'm just going to read the email and then kind of explain where we're going to go from there. So Liam writes, over the past few years, we have seen many different teams start rebuilding, with some doing it differently than others. Looking at the more recent examples, I was seeing two different ways. One is loading up on first-round draft picks like the Thunder and Rockets have. The other is trading for a lot of younger players and rebuilding around that core. So, if you were the GM of a team that just started out a rebuild, how would you do it? Would you try a completely different way that I didn't mention? So, Liam, this is a wonderful question.
I know you want to take this. Can I address that real quick, Mike?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
I just want to say, in terms of the rebuild, because there's always questions, right? Is tanking good? Is tanking bad? Are these process style rebuilds okay? Are these GMs in fact geniuses? Is Sam Presti doing the right thing by amassing all these first round picks, et cetera, et cetera? Here's the truth. And I'll never forget this because I was talking to Tim. Here, no, it's true. This is the truth. I was talking to Tim Connolly. Okay. This was about 4 years ago. And we did a story. It was called The Nuggets. You know, the internet's favorite team is still loading. It was about how the Nuggets got all these fun players. Everyone loved watching them on League Pass, but, you know, can they take that next step as a contender? And he just straight up told me, he's like, yeah, man, we got lucky when we drafted Jokic, you know? Yep. And, you know, listen, they've drafted really well. They've drafted and signed three guys to max extensions. They've done all the right moves, but it doesn't matter if they don't get lucky with Jokic. And you can be the Sixers and you can tank and you can end up with a generational center who is injured at the wrong times and a really talented player who can't shoot. You can be the Spurs and tank for 1 year and get the number one pick and get Tim Duncan, and now you're set for 20 years. Or you can be the Spurs and make the perfect trade for Kawhi Leonard, but then he wants to leave. So Listen, I'm not traversing some insane new ground here to say a lot of luck goes into it. And I understand why the GMs who, you know, amass all these first round picks, even though I think most of the first round picks being moved are not even good ones, are doing it because they want to get as many bites at the apple as possible. But there really is no one way. And the one way is to get lucky, because not even the number one picks in this league are guaranteed to turn into MVPs and superstars, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Like, there really is just no great way. And that's why it sometimes bothers me a little bit when teams get, you know, criticized for building around a young core. And why aren't you going after draft picks, or, you know, vice versa? It's just as, listen, there really is no method, because you have to tank the right year and hope this guy pans out, et cetera. Like, there's no good way.
This is a question that is its own podcast, and we're talking about markets and are you a free agent destination and blah, 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 blah. There's just a million different factors that go into all this stuff. But real quick, talking about luck, which is super important and cannot be overlooked. It's like, if you're the Nuggets, the Clippers drafted Jerome Robinson 13th overall what draft was that? 2018? Yeah, 2018 draft. Jerome Robinson. Just leaving Michael Porter Jr. there for the Denver Nuggets to take. So it's like, you know, Michael Porter Jr. could be on the Clippers right now. The Clippers could have had Shea and Michael Porter Jr. from that draft, if you want to think about that for 2 seconds. It's just, it's absolutely wild. And they would have presumably been able to keep one of them in the Paul George trade. And then the Clippers are just looking like a completely unfair juggernaut right now, if that's the case. So it's like they got a little bit unlucky there. The Nuggets lucked out. They got Porter Jr., who they just signed to this max extension, who looks wonderful offensively when healthy. So you can't overlook it. But Rohan, so getting into what I wanted to kind of put my twist on Liam's question here, I think there are, you could say, 7 genuine rebuilds taking place right now. 8 if you include the Timberwolves, which I don't, because they have 2 mid-career vets on max deals and they want to win right now. So I'm not going to call them a rebuilding team, even though they're super young. So the teams that I'm looking at right now are the Thunder, the Rockets, the Pistons, the Magic, the Pelicans, the Cavs, and the Spurs. Those are the teams that I think are in full-on, maybe not full-on, because you could debate certain things here and there, but I think these teams are rebuilding. So out of all these situations, I want you to tell me which 3 fan bases should be the most excited about what has already happened in terms of, you know, the assets that they have and the players that are on their roster and just what the future might bring. Just like which situations should fans be most excited about out of those rebuilding situations?
So even though I think this one is the highest risk, high reward, I think number one is the Pelicans, just because you have Zion there. You have yes. Brandon Ingram. Like, you have two real blue chippers who are really good and could be, I think, cornerstones of a team that's really good for a really long time. Now, granted, does Zion want to leave? Is David Griffin the right guy for the job? Like I mentioned, like, this is that's a powder keg, and it's an explosive situation. But guess what? I love the chaos. I love the mess. I love the intrigue. I love the drama. So that's the one I think I would be excited about as a fan. Like, even if Zion leaves and now you have to deal with like an Anthony Davis situation all over again.
Well, that would be a disaster.
We don't. But I do want his agent to come out publicly and say he doesn't want to get traded to the Celtics. I would personally enjoy that.
I would not.
But yeah, I think that's the one. It's the obvious one. And the potential there is really, really high. I really like the Thunder too.
Really? That surprises me. Can I just say that surprises me, because you are you've been publicly against, I would say, the rebuild strategy that the Oklahoma City Thunder
I'm not even
on. Is that
I'm
fair
not necessarily
to say?
I'm not here's let me clarify it. I'm not necessarily against the strategy as much as I am against like the public fetishization. I'm never going to be able to say it. I'm not from this country. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to fully get behind like how many people just throw out the number of first round picks, but don't really often. I think Bobby Marks was the only person to like really break down the picks Oklahoma City's gotten and put them in the tiers and be like, these ones actually have a chance to be good, etc. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, Mike, it has less to do with the picks and a lot more to do with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I think is really, really good. And he barely played last season, which it contributes to this problem. But like, he had a hell of a season last year. He's really, really good. And I think that is really what excites me. And, you know, that 1 year Chris Paul was there, we also saw him be part of a good team. Like, he can contribute to a good team. We know that. Now, can he lead it? That's a little different. At the end of the day, I do think they're going to have either the possibility to trade for someone. I do think they're a team that should maybe try to trade for Ben Simmons.
That would be something.
Or draft, or maybe one of these picks hits at the right time and they can draft someone really valuable. So I would just be excited if I was a Thunder fan, because you really have already a great talent there in place in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and I think that's someone to get behind. So that, and then I'm going to go with the Pistons, just because, you know, you just had the number one pick, and I think it's okay to be excited about Cade Cunningham. Like, why not get behind someone like that, get behind the number one pick? Part of it is that it's unknown, right? We haven't seen him play in the NBA at all. For all we know, he's the next superstar in the waiting. So that was kind of my rationale for those three teams.
So you had two of the same ones as I did. Pelicans, first of all, do you agree that they're in a rebuild? Because they were trying to get Kyle Lowry and, you know,
I think they're in a rebuild. It's David Griffin who doesn't agree that they're in a rebuild. But I wouldn't say they're in a rebuild, because they're not trying to like actively tear down their roster, but like, they're a team that's trying to go from bad to good.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I put them here because Zion's still in his rookie scale deal. Ingram's on the max, but it's the fun max. And then they just have all these picks from the AD trade, which was only 2 years ago. So I think it's still fair to qualify them as a rebuilding team. And if so, I'm making the rules here. So Zion is there. So
If they had signed Lowry, they'd no longer be a rebuilding team.
Correct.
Yeah.
So Zion makes the Pelicans number one for me. I think their fan base should be very excited despite us criticizing their offseason left and right. Just some things just like don't matter when you zoom out and you take a deep breath. It's just like, we have Zion. If Zion's healthy, this guy could like win the MVP this season. Like, he's just that good, in my opinion. So that's just it's an incredible thing to have. I also have the Pistons here, my number two team, and it's for basically the same reasons as you did. Like, Cade Cunningham, when you just have the guy who, you know, he's the reigning number one overall pick, and a lot of really smart people who watched him at Oklahoma State and throughout the draft process and then at Summer League, et cetera, just are so high on him. And he's got all the physical tools that you kind of want in someone that you're building around, too. So you have him, you have Beef Stew, you have Sadiq Bey, who I absolutely love. One of my favorite rookies last season. I was heartbroken when the Celtics passed over him.
This is going to be like a little bit of a Sadiq Bey podcast this year. He's someone who I imagine could come up a lot on open floor this year. Yeah.
I love Sadiq Bey. We didn't really get to see Killian Hayes last year, unfortunately, because of a hip injury. But he could be really interesting, or he could get traded if he doesn't fit with Cade, who might just be kind of the primary ball handler.
I feel like the Pistons are going to have that kind of year where they're not very good, but almost every single game they win is just like really annoying for a good team. Like, some good team's going to just go into Detroit, pencil in a victory, and then be like, oh yeah, like, wait, the Nets lost to Detroit like 130 to 128? Like, what happened? Like,
I feel like that's going to be every Pistons
game. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The other team that I have here is Houston instead of Oklahoma City, because I love Shea. Sure, I love him. He's about to start that max, the fun max. That's great. Houston, I like it more because it just feels like fresh with what they have. Like, I like their collection of young talent more than I like the collection of young talent that Oklahoma City has.
You're not in on Poku?
I'm not going to say I'm out on
Poku. Okay.
You know, I really appreciated him entertaining me.
Okay.
Excuse me. Last season with, you know, behind the back passes out of bounds, the fact that he weighs less than I do. He's just a living legend. There's no doubt about it. But I do feel like there's the possibility of SGA getting a little upset with what's going on there. And
I do think that they're rebuild's a little bit more delicate, because I don't think they can slow play it like this forever. And I kind of think the Simmons trade is the move for them.
For OKC?
Yeah.
So why would Philly do that?
Because the problem is, I don't think they have the right vets to send back to Philly. I don't know if they can make it a three-teamer somehow, or maybe it would have been better when they did have one of those vets that they were trying to dump off that ultimately could have been useful, but
If they held off and they were patient and Kemba Walker looked great in the first 2 weeks of the season.
That was interesting how quickly they moved off of him. Yeah, that was interesting how quickly they moved off of him. But I don't know, man. I just I think that'd be really good, two guys to have on the wing defensively, and Shea and Simmons. Shea can handle the ball. You know, everyone and their mother has heard about putting Simmons in the Draymond role. That's one of those places where I think he could do it. I'm just floating that out there. Sam, call me. Call me Sam Presti. We'll talk.
The Thunder could build around Simmons, which is something Sixers just have never done. You know, they've always prioritized other guys
on their team. Can we talk about that Embiid quote real quick, where he said, I think we've always started to fit the team around him?
Yes.
Okay. I know you're maybe not the biggest Simmons or Embiid fan as the, and I don't blame you, that the Celtics and the Sixers have a storied rivalry,
no, et cetera. I look at it as objectively as
I understand. But let me just put it this way. I think I'm higher on Embiid than you. I love Embiid. I really do love Embiid. I think he's MVP caliber player. I think he's like a top five talent in the league. The only thing holding him back, I think, is the fact that he is so big and it's hard to keep that body in shape, et cetera. But for him to suggest, like, the real problem with the Sixers, the team has been built around neither of them. It's been trying to find some kind of midpoint. I just thought it was a little ridiculous for him to come out and say, now, obviously he's frustrated. I understand why. But for him to say that the team's been built around Simmons, that's objectively untrue just because of his presence on the team.
I can see where Joel Embiid was saying there.
It might lean Simmons in their compromise, but it's not built around him.
Well, look, the criticism is that there are certain players that you have to get because of what Ben Simmons cannot do, that maybe you would be able to get a different type of player. But I think the criticism and the frustration there has always been, and what he was actually saying is like, dude, you haven't gotten better at anything that you're supposed to be doing. And so for him to, Ben Simmons hasn't said this publicly, but it's just been leaked stuff about his desire to be on his own team. And if I was Joel and I heard that, I'd be like, we have had a lot of success together on the floor.
Yeah.
So why would you want your own situation? I think that is a little selfish, particularly because if you just improved in area A, area B, we wouldn't be in this situation. Like, it's not.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm not trying to, I definitely don't want to, because that's a big part of the story, is that if Simmons had improved as a free throw shooter or just took a baseline jump shot, anything, it would make a gigantic difference. I do think the narrative's gotten a little out of hand in terms of, like, people are trying to compare this to Harden, or people are like, what does it mean that a guy with 4 years on his contract can ask out, et cetera, et cetera. Philly wants him gone. And I like, somehow that is, you know, whether it's just really good media spin or whatever it is, where it's like, they're like, the players are trying to convince him to come back. Doc wants him back. The Sixers don't want him on the team long term. I don't believe that. I'm not reporting that, but I refuse to believe that. I think that the Sixers and Simmons equally want him on a different team this season. I don't believe that the Sixers want him back. I think they made that pretty clear when they were shopping him all summer, when they shopped him for Harden, when the team made the comments they did after the loss.
To be fair. Shopping him for Harden, that's just something that happens in the NBA. Because Harden is a top five perennial MVP candidate.
Yes.
And you are a better team with Harden than Ben
Simmons. I'm not saying Philly did anything wrong with that, or that I just think that it's being painted a lot as like Simmons is another disgruntled superstar asking out in the vein that AD or Harden did. I think this is a very unique situation where he knows the team didn't want him on the team anymore this summer. So he's like, why would I come back? Like, we both know you want me gone. But it's being turned into, I think, entirely Simmons is asking out, when I think the team wants him gone too.
I think it's a bigger headache, even though he's not getting paid $8 million. Yeah. I think it's a bigger headache for the Sixers right now than Simmons.
That's true, but I mean, you know, I think, deserve also some scrutiny for their inability to handle the situation, because that's part of the game, handled poorly by everyone, no doubt about it. And I just think it's being turned into a lot. Like, I see people being like, what does it mean for the future of the NBA that someone with 4 years left on his contract asked out? And it's like, no one asked that question when, like, I don't know, the Raptors traded DeMar DeRozan when he didn't want out. Like, I'm just saying that it's like, I think people are kind of gliding over the fact that the Sixers this summer were also trying very hard to get rid of him.
I hear what you're saying. I also think that it would be problematic if NBA players would sign max extensions and then with 4 years left be like, you know what, I'm not going to show up for training camp this year, so trade me.
I don't disagree. I just don't think this is setting that precedent at all, because of how aggressively Philly was trying to shop him. It's only the point I'm trying to make. I don't think that this is going to be some kind of sign of things to come.
We will see. We've talked so much about Simmons, and we've kind of taken a breather from that topic, I think, in recent weeks, and I'm sure that it'll pick up again in the weeks ahead. We will see. There's always new developments in this story. But I think that that's where we will end today's episode, Rohan. Thanks again so much to our listeners. Thanks again for sending all those emails in. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Before we go, Rohan, do you have anything you want to say about, any apologies you have for your slandering of Bill Belichick's completely logic, common sense, practical coaching style, or anything along those lines before we sign off?
I just think I'm just really, really amused that he's coaching scared like the rest of us. Maybe he'll write another letter to Trump about it. So good for Belichick. Good for his son. I'm sure his son worked really hard to get that defensive coordinator job or whatever it is. I'm sure he was more qualified than anybody else, all the other coaches who could have gotten that job. So, you know, at least he got to lose together as father and son. I do want to shout out all the people who've been emailing us about our pop culture takes. I'm glad we aren't completely derailing the pod with that talk. I'm very, very excited to get the conclusion of Squid Game and talk about that with you next week. I know the season's approaching so quickly, but once I do finish Squid Game, we'll absolutely have to discuss some of the games they've played on the show. Another show I just recently started watching, the third season came out, but I had never seen any of it, is Sex Education on Netflix. Another recommendation. Very good.
I heard that was good. I have not checked it out because it's October and we're giving recommendations all of a sudden before we sign off. Midnight Mass on Netflix.
Ooh.
I binged it last week. It's okay. I'm not going to say it's like the greatest thing I've ever seen, and I watched it right after Squid Game, which was a mistake. but good. I would say if you like horror, check it out. It's not bad.
I started Midnight Mass because I really like Mike Flanagan, who's done some other Netflix shows, Haunting of Hill House, which was really good. Mm-hmm. And while it's October, I just feel like the audience should know that this is Mike's month. He's one of those people. And I love that. I love that about you. I'm excited to get into some. Have you seen Malignant?
Doug, of course.
Come on. Malignant.
It came out.
Malignant was lit, dude. That was a movie. They don't make them like Malignant anymore.
Malignant was awesome. I'm about to go watch Friday the 13th Part 10, Jason, Outer Space, Let's Go, a classic, hit it up on HBO Max. Yeah, this is my time where I am a horror movie fanatic, so good times all around.
I need you to make some recommendations because I never unsubscribed to my Shudder account, so I got to get my money's worth there.
We will have, we will, maybe we'll kick off next week's episode with something horror movie related. That would
there
be fun.
Go.
Until then, everybody, please stay safe. Everybody, please continue to enjoy the off season. Whoa.